Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for this Thursday, April 4th, starts now. Today on the show, Ben welcomes back Chicago's 25th Ward Alderman, Byron Sigcho Lopez. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader, chicagoreader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, you want to keep up on what the best things to do in Chicago are, well, you need to head to chicagoreader.com because that's where you're going to find out. And if you want to find more Ben Jarofsky, head to chicagoreader.com/Jarofsky. I'll spell it for you. That's J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Mayoral Love Thursday, and here's why. Actually, it's an absence of mayoral love. Got Alderman Byron Sigcho Lopez standing by, but before I bring him on, let me just rant and rave for a little bit. Today's Chicago Sun-Times was filled with stories. Well, not just the Sun-Times, but the media today filled with stories about Brandon Johnson unveiling with a press conference his $150 million in TIF aid downtown housing conversion program. So this is the one that Mayor Lori Lightfoot came up with. This was her idea at the end of her tenure, where you spend some TIF money and some federal money to convert office buildings, vacant office buildings, into residential, using LaSalle Central TIF money, which is a TIF program I know way too much about, and I won't burden you with a dissertation on that right now. But anyway, it's one of the city of Chicago's favorite things to spend economic development dollars in the downtown, with the idea that if the downtown is strong and vibrant, then the rest of the city will follow. And even if it doesn't, oh, to hell with them anyway. Because really all that matters is the downtown. I am just paraphrasing, ladies and gentlemen, years of editorials that I've read in Crane, Sun-Times, and the Tribune. So the mayor has decided to spend the money here, the details have not completely been fleshed out, but they probably won't be, ladies and gentlemen, for Chicago. If Mayor Johnson has learned anything from Mayor Rahman Daley, keep those details hidden, all right? Because the more the peasants of Chicago know, the more likely they are to rebel against the program. The interesting thing about this, and I had a laugh at this, I've been reading news accounts of mayoral initiatives for many, many years, going back to the days of Harold Washer, going back to the days of Mayor Byrne. And there was something absent from the news accounts, where they bring out the developers who are extolling the plan. They bring out the various, the Chamber of Commerce types who are extolling the plan. You know what's missing? Unfettered praise for the mayor. I'm like, where's the kind of daily, the things we used to hear about Mayor Daley? Like, the sun rises on the mayor and it sets on the mayor. Our mayor is the center of the universe. It's so funny. I remember when Daley was the mayor in the 90s and the O's, and then when Rahm came in, developers knew, probably because, well, they were probably smart enough to figure this out on their own. But if they were definitely under Rahm, if they were ever to forget it, some aide would tell them, make sure you mention the mayor, make sure you praise the mayor. And so they would praise the mayor. This would not happen without his guidance, his leadership. And it built this aura of the mayor as this all-powerful being that we the city could not do without. And it brainwashed you Chicagoans. You elected Daley year after year because you read it in the newspaper. Well, he's the greatest mayor who ever was, Ben. Nothing would ever happen without him. And then you pass it on to Rahm. You had reelected him in 2005. I will never let you forget that, city of Chicago. You know, city of Chicago, you sports fans out there are still the Bears for drafting Trubisky over Mahomes. I don't blame you. I still blame the Bears for that. But I will never stop chiding you for electing Rahm in 2015. He's our mayor, Ben. I read it in the Tribune. Anyway, I guess this is a sign of new independence in the city of Chicago. When developers get that big paw out there getting money from the city, they don't praise the mayor anymore. It's like, yeah, whatever. It was my idea anyway. All right, without further ado, I'm going to bring on good friend of the show, Alderman Byron Sixto Lopez. Byron, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Good to be back. Thank you for the invitation.
Yes.
And Chris.
So there's three things that I want to discuss with you today. So the top of the list is Monday's special meeting. We've talked about this at great length. Rosanna Rodriguez, I urge everybody to listen to that broadcast that I did. And this is one of the great debates in the history of the Chicago City Council. The City Council entertained the contradictions inherent, Byron Sixto Lopez, in having a First Amendment that protects freedom of speech and having a reverence for the flag that some people feel that if you burn the flag, you should automatically be driven from society. In your case, you didn't burn the flag, but the forces that despise Mayor Johnson took it as an opportunity to embarrass him and humiliate you and strip you of your chairmanship as committee chair of the Housing Committee. So which will oversee, by the way, that $150 million TIF deal in this in the loop. I could go on and on and on about this, Byron, but I think you should have an opportunity to give it from your perspective. So why don't you just tell us exactly how this went down and how you see it from the moment that you spoke at the pro-Palestine rally, anti-Israel slaughtering in Gaza rally, in which before you arrived, someone had burned the flag. Take it away, Byron.
Yeah, thank you, Van. And thank you for the opportunity to speak up about the facts, because some of my colleagues, unfortunately, they're entitled to their own facts, apparently, or they want to hear what they want to believe. They don't want to hear facts. And I think that is exactly as you said, right? We this is a lot to do with the efforts to transform the city, the efforts to start calling out, in fact, some of these developers and hedge fund managers. Let's remember, in 2019, Lincoln Yards and related got $2.3 billion, with a B, $2.3 billion, to build approximately 20,000 units or so, I'm at least in the 78 that I oversee, until I got redistricted out when you start asking too many questions and putting too many committees of residents and empowering residents. Let's remember, we were able to defeat the proposal for a casino and start the questioning what happened with those units of housing. Similarly to this LaSalle TIF proposal, you know, we're being very clear. Let's remember, HUD even has an inquiry about aldermanic prerogative, basically pushing back against affordable housing, because there are apparently some older persons still that they don't believe that they should have affordable housing in their wards. Among other issues, the misuse of what we believe should be community prerogative rather than the unilateral decision of a local official. So when we are unpacking what this is truly about, is those forces of division that should definitely be compared to the Verdoliak 29, that, you know, in fact, the person leading the charge was no other than Alderman Conway, that is a new member of the council, that took the opportunity to even said, despite of the facts to the country, that we burn communities, basically. That was his inflammatory remark. When, you know, if we look at our track record, you know, we've been actually rebuilding and addressing the displacement of those developers and corporations that hurt property. 80,000 units that today is still empty in the city of Chicago, that these hedge fund managers and developers like Related and Lincoln Yards rather keep empty or in bad conditions, let it decay, only to turn it around and sell it for profit. So, and on top of that, be subsidized by HUD and TIF and many other public subsidies. So when we start talking about these issues and the need to create housing and holding developers accountable for their promises to the city. And we believe that promises should be kept. Same goes to CHA with their, you know, over $200 million of reserves, over 5,000 vacancies. You know, we start talking about housing as a human right. We start talking about the unhoused, 20,000 being CPS children, 69,000 of them residents of Chicago, many are veterans. Then we see the hypocrisy and the political theater to distract and trying to impose their will, because apparently they believe in the First Amendment right when it's convenient with them, for them. But it starts getting in shaky grounds when we start asking about the DNC. What happened, you know, with everybody else when we are being targets of fascist governors like Abbott, making our city a target, not because we're a sanctuary city. I mean, we talked about this in the show, but because the DNC was announced in the city of Chicago and it has become convenient to blame the progressive black mayor of the city, Mayor Johnson, for anything and all the ills and their own inadequate responses. And I would say to the governor too, to the situation with new neighbors and the situation again of wars that keep soaking critical resources and the billions of dollars to fund wars abroad to leave people hanging and in starvation, even in our own communities, reserving resources for our South and West sides. Let's remember in the federal government, 20,000 housing units in the West Side, in the 37th Ward, after the federal government declared a natural disaster, we still yet to hear for help and support for something that should be a given. But unfortunately, in Chicago, we have to fight for. So all this right. is a time, you know, for us to demand what is deserved of the city of Chicago, federal and state government to start investing in the city. And apparently that made, unfortunately, some people uncomfortable and they saw the opportunity to again attack. I think that, you know, we see now those efforts for what they are and the true colors exposed.
All right. Now, lot to unpack there. That riff ties to two of the topics we're going to discuss. We'll get to the issue of housing in the city, but let's keep it on the flag burning thing. So once again, I'll go back to what went down. It was a rally. And yep. before the alderman got there, somebody burned the flag. Okay. Once it became public that Alderman Sixto Lopez spoke at a rally where the flag had been burned. One more point. It happened before mm-hmm. he got there and he did not do it. Once that became public, then the anti-Johnson faction in the city council had a target and they went at it. And so they proposed that you be removed from your chair as the housing committee chair on the grounds that what you did was so horrific. And I will now, since you mentioned Alderman Conway, 34th Ward Alderman Conway, I'll just point out his point that he made on the city council floor. It was a great moment for Alderman Conway. He got up there and he said, the First Amendment protects free speech. I'm paraphrasing. That is true, Alderman Conway. But the First Amendment does not protect somebody's from consequence and it does not guarantee that you be in the chair of the housing committee. The First Amendment does not guarantee that you be the chair of the housing committee. And my point is, Alderman Byron Sixto Lopez did not put the flag on fire. It was some other guy. Yes, that other guy, that veteran whose name I can't remember now, he can't be the housing committee chair. He's not even an alderman. I'm just helping you out there, Alderman Conway. All right. I know logic was not your strong suit. I'm just, oh boy, burn the flag cannot be the housing chair. We agree on that. Yeah, you know. Come on, Byron. You got a lot of
flags, I mean, I was. I mean, in a way, I was, you know, that's what I said. I mean, some of my colleagues maybe need to take a you know, class on First Amendment 101.
No logic.
So that, you know, is really a, you know, the whole speech is a contradiction on itself. But again, I think it shows a thing. And again, there's some, for what I understand, even mayoral aspirations and all that. But and I understand, look, I think that, you know, when people see, you know, the opportunity, right, to come out and attack and, you know, we remember those days when, you know, the Valladolid 29 will literally stand on their desks and demand that, you know, that you know, they're not forgotten. And we see similarly here with Alderman Conway. Again, we being very clear that we are fair, we listen to everyone, right? But I think there's some interests that expect to have their way as in the past, and they just don't see that the city, Chicagoans, are demanding a different day. And I think it was just, you know, again, just at some point, Alderman Moore mentioned on the floor is like, I don't even know what my colleague is being accused of. You know, he mentioned that he was there even before, you know, I was there, and he didn't see any smoke. He didn't see anything that, you know, may as well anybody would not have been able to see. It was rainy that day. But alternative facts, you know, unfortunately, especially in these Trumpian dystopian years, have become, you know, people entitled to those facts, especially, you know, maybe individuals who don't come from working class backgrounds, don't see the situation in our community. So it's easy for them to say that we are, you know, inflaming the or even saying that we are calling for violence. Quite the contrary, right? We are the ones calling for a ceasefire. They're the ones who oppose those, that are okay with the hate crimes rising in our communities, that are okay with, like, armed dealers continue to profit from the suffering in our communities. You know, this is a time when we're actually saying no. We believe that the foreign policies in our country must change, and that diplomacy and common sense should prevail. And ironically, some of these members, call themselves part of a common sense caucus, you know, which is laughable when you have so many contradictions.
Well, and I want to point out, that's true about Alderman David Moore, our good friend from the 17th Ward, been on the show many times. He was also at there. I didn't know that. Until the council meeting, and they didn't move to strip him of anything. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, why are you picking on Byron? What's the David was there too. And
he said it candidly, right? He's like, well, I don't know what to say. You know, I was there, and then, you know, ceasefire. You know, he didn't see anything wrong. Just like I didn't see anything wrong. And again, the infringement on First Amendment rights, I think, is something that we often see in these totalitarian regimes that are trying to make a comeback. And I think that is important that we see and that we call out. And Chris, as James Baldwin says very clearly, right? Because we love our country so much, we got to, you know, criticize it in a constructive way, because genocide and, of course, the dehumanization of Palestinian and immigrant communities, the criminalization, literally, you know, let's remember in the last State of the Union, President Biden, who just a few years ago called us essential workers, critical part of the coalition, today call us criminals, using one example. In the whole State of the Union, the only time that he referred to migration, you know, criminalizing a whole community. I do think that it is important that we call out, especially in these times, the failures and the failures to even fulfill the promises of immigration reform. Now they have completely forgotten about Gaza. They're forgetting about immigration reform. And it's time that we are call out. So, look, we have actually solutions. The president of Mexico, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, have given a detailed plan of what can be done at the border. I think it's time that we start falling for the propaganda and President Biden campaigning.
All right, let's get back to...
Instead of listening to Democratic voters.
Let's get back to the issue of the flag here for a moment. I'm going to and we'll get to Chris Taliaferro, your colleague in the city council. Mm. Follow me on what I'm about to tell you, Alderman. So I remember when Colin Kaepernick took the knee. And I was very supportive of Colin Kaepernick when he took the knee. He was protesting police brutality, and he used his prominence to call attention to an issue. And I had I thought they were respectful conversations with many people who were really offended by him taking the knee. And they would explain to me how important and sacrosanct all our protocols and customs are regarding the flag, particularly for not only veterans who served in the military, but for people who support veterans. And Ben, you have to appreciate and understand and relate that. That's how you understand. That's the opposition. And I said, okay, I've listened to you. I absorbed it. Okay. Now I'm watching Donnie Trump, MAGA, the head of MAGA. Okay. I'm just telling you this, Byron. The man wears a tie that's a flag, which is a violation of protocol. The man wears a hat when they play the national anthem at his rallies, which is a violation of protocol. The man sings the national anthem, not making this up, Byron, along with the most god-awful rendition I've ever heard since Roseanne Barr brutalized it at an all-star game or minor league game years ago, which is sung by a bunch of insurrectionists. I'm not making this up, Byron. I know a lot of my lefty friends don't follow what MAGA's doing. I'll tell you what they're doing, okay? Mm-hmm. He's violating far beyond anything you or that veteran did, the protocols on an ongoing basis that are supposed to protect and respect our flag. Help me out, Byron. Why is it that your friend Bill Conway, Raymond Lopez, and all the others aren't calling Donald Trump out for his daily violation of the protocols and of governing the flag? I'll wait, to quote Jeanette Taylor.
that's such a great question. But I think that, you know, it goes to what, you know, what, you know, starts surfacing in the debate, right? When so a few of my colleagues mentioned how some of the same, at least a few of the people who were signing on this letter were in a Trump rally with Proud Boys, you know, not too long ago, right? Yeah. And it goes to the hypocrisy, right, of calling about, you know, or American values when they failed to call out on these atrocities committed by these, I mean, I would say, you know, criminal, literally has former President Trump criminal charges on him. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, that is not, that does not create any outrage in them, neither than they're literally fat Nazis carrying the flag in cities like Nashville, you know, and this is also recent. So the hypocrisy, right? And I think that, that has to be called out on those who are for American values when it's convenient for their agenda and their corruption, quite frankly. But when it comes to denouncing the morality of a genocide, the morality of leaving immigrant families who put literally food on our tables for having this inhumanity, just to even allow them to have a work permit, even though we have a long tradition of having bracero programs and other temporary work programs that we allowed to do that via executive order. The president has no issue, and that's what I think bipartisan agreement happens when it comes to wars, when it comes to dehumanization of and exploitation of workers from all sorts. So I do think that we got to call out that hypocrisy because, as you said, when MAGA is doing all these horrendous atrocities that is calling for just like... serious, you know, and really laughable proposals like deporting 18 million people, even calling on conducting and going moving forward with an atrocity that would be to go forward with a on the ground invasion to Rafah and Gaza. I mean, you call these and these are not criminal acts, but yet they're trying to fabricate a story to again just to denounce a First Amendment right to say this is wrong. And that's what we're calling on the attention and raising awareness. We actually oppose the violence and denounce the violence that we promoted abroad and are calling on our government to listen to the base of Democratic voters. 71% who are saying we got to cease firing immediately, release all hostages, reach humanitarian aid to Gaza, and that we need immigration reform, that we need to bring investment to our communities. But yet... the president continues to fail to listen to the base.
All right. I will position to you right now. Nobody truly believes in the First Amendment. Nobody. Okay. And definitely MAGA doesn't believe it. And I call upon one more time, Raylo. Oh, I forgot Nikki Sposato, my old friend, Nick. Come on. You guys come on the show and get Anthony Beale and Napolitano and Marty Quinn. All of you. I want to see that resolution calling for hearings on how MAGA and President Trump are continually disrespecting the flag. And you can bring in the veterans who can testify as to how it's a denigration of the flag to wear your baseball hat while the national anthem is playing. And furthermore, it's a denigration of the flag to bring the Confederate flag into Congress when you're in the middle of your insurrection. So I would... Raylo, get that resolution written up. I know you're a busy guy, but I look forward to you convening this. All right, now, Byron, one of the things I read in the newspaper, and I believe absolutely everything I read in the newspaper, is that that you had a meeting with Chris Taliaferro, who's the alderman of the 29th Ward, and you at that meeting, and I'm doing this from memory, essentially apologized if you had offended him with your appearance at a rally. One more time, Chicago. He did not burn the flag. He was not there when the flag was burned. He was merely at the rally after the flag was burned. You apologized, and he apparently accepted your apology, and he said as much on the council floor. Why didn't the other guys drop the matter after Chris Taliaferro said he accepted your why did Raylo stick with it? Why did Billy Conway stick with it? Why did Nick Sposato stick with it? Why did all these MAGA types in the city council stick with the Get Byron ordinance or resolution or whatever it was after Taliaferro, who is a vet, as I recall, accepted your apology? Help me out, Byron.
So, yeah, I mean, look, we met in Easter Sunday, right, with, you know, Mayor Johnson broke the meeting with Alderman Conway, Alderman Villegas, and Alderman Taliaferro, all veterans, part of the veteran caucus. And, you know, we went over the facts, you know, like, I share what is obvious, you know, and you know that I would be certainly denouncing the media if this was true, but they could not produce any video or anything that that will fabricate the story the way that they were able to, unfortunately, fabricate via X, right, and former Twitter. And, you know, there was a recognition, you know, that, you know, the X toxic environment, you know, and as well as pressure, external pressure from veterans that, of course, were feeding into this narrative, you know, forced, you know, a reaction from Alderman Taliaferro, who is a veteran, who has a brother in active duty. And of course, you know, is very personal. And of course, you know, as at a human level, him as a father, as a brother, you know, has a human reaction to things. And but after we discuss it, and I said, again, I had no problem at a human level to apologize on the way that maybe he interpreted or saw the issue from the fabrication in X and these, I think it's a hedge fund manager actually who created the whole frenzy. But, you know, it was important that we go to the facts, and the fact that is that Alderman Taliaferro does and understand and believes for, actually, and I will tell you this, on the First Amendment. I said, look, I understand you have a First Amendment right, and perhaps I did not agree with the display of that, but I understand, you know, I understand the issues that you're raising. You know, in fact, Alderman Taliaferro himself signed on the ceasefire resolution. Unlike the other, and I would maybe call like the attempt to revive the Verdolia 29 with 16. Now, so the good thing is that they are going down in size. That is a good thing for the city of Chicago. However, I do think the viciousness, right, and the agendas at play, right, were clear, and they were trying to weaponize and intentionally create this narrative of the racial tensions, right, understanding Alderman Taliaferro as a leader, you know, in the West Side, and what it means to be in confrontation with another Southwest Side alderman like myself, representing a Latino community, and you know the sensationalization, the opportunistic approach to pitch communities against each other and show us in conflict, showing a tasteless show of racial tensions. And fortunately, when after we met and we had over an hour and a half conversation, Alderman Taliaferro, the mayor, and I understood, you know, that the city is under attack, understood our sincere apologies, and he did apologize, unlike the other two, for putting the life of my family at risk. And, you know, we had, I do think, a worthy conversation, and that's what I mentioned, that, you know, probably only happens in Holy Week. But I think that my other two colleagues was clearly that had a different agenda. And I think it's now, you know, I read this article by Ray Hananian from Suburban News. He's a veteran from a veteran family. And I think that already people can see, and they start comparing them, right, to the Verdolia 29, about the configuration. They were also the people against the ceasefire or resolution against the sanctuary city. So when we see a pattern and that they're not interested on the best interest of the city of Chicago, I think people start seeing their real motives.
Oh, man. Yeah, Ray Hananian. I've known Ray for a long time. He's been on the show, and he covered the city council back in the 80s, and he knows what it was like in those days. Because in those days, Byron, you're so much younger than us, you wouldn't notice.
I was in diapers still.
You were in diapers, so it wasn't just for Doliak. There was a guy named Burke. Hello, Ed Burke, 14th Ward Alderman, the man that the city council in its infinite idiocy gave a standing ovation to, that Ed Burke. He was the finance chair, okay, during the Doliak 29 days.
Ray Lopez mentor.
He would go to the city call press room, and it would be like when you watch seals being fed at SeaWorld. They would open their mouth and he would throw fish into the mouths of the media. Here's what you got for today. Ray will tell you. And they would write, sources tell me that Harold Washington did X, Y, Z. So this has been going on for a long time. I need to know something like this. So Talia Faro, listen to you, apologize. Except, you know, you guys had a moment of reconciliation of sorts, and he voted no on the resolution. Okay, he was one of the 29.
That's right.
The other 16 weren't. This is weird, man. So you're the 25th ward alderman. The 24th ward alderman is Monique Scott. She sits literally right next to you, and next to her is Sylvania Taberas, who's the 23rd alderman. They voted yes. I need to know this. In this council, when they're about to portray you and stab you in the back and just totally contradict themselves in the First Amendment, do they at least say, hey, Byron, I don't want to do this, but I got to do this? Do they try to humanize it, or they just run over you? Go ahead.
Well, some of my colleagues didn't really say much, right? Alderman Tavares really didn't say much. Other colleagues that were very vocal before really didn't find a way to really articulate even what they were really about, right? Or what were really the huge outrage, right? After it was clear that I didn't burn the flag, even though according to Juan Rangel, remember who he was, according to Juan Rangel, I did burn the flag. I mean, this man is literally putting in all over X. This is a flat burger. So there are people who will take advantage of anything because they believe in their own facts. But there are also the people, you know, who see this for what it is, right? So it was good to see my colleagues, right? You know, especially those who have been, you know, understanding the ceasefire resolution, why it's important to maintain the sanctuary city status, that we are fighting to be, you know, equitable in our housing policies, that we're being fair. Look, even with Alderman Wagenspeck, he had a proposal about an affordable site in Milwaukee Avenue. Nobody, even departments, wanted to help him because he, you know, he believes his own facts. And again, if he's about weaponizing anything, you know, I mean, this is a person who came in for the Lightfoot administration and, you know, had no issues with a pre-authoritarian regime, but now are giving us lessons of democratic and transparent measures. It's laughable. But I do think that underscores the real motives and what we've been dealing with in the last 10 months, which is a very blind opposition that will try to undermine, no matter if it's good or bad, and an administration that has inherited a huge mess that is trying to bring everybody to the table. And, you know, even, like I said, other women, Scott was saying as she was speaking that she actually liked me. So it was like, well, and then she was also saying that she doesn't know why we're even here today. But yet they signed the letter to be there. So again, I think the contradictions go more in line, or let's remember, I took former Speaker Madigan to the Illinois Supreme Court, yes, challenging his use of funds, legal campaigns for his legal defense. We now see Trump, we're now former President Trump, doing the exact same thing, misleading donors for his legal defense of real serious and allegations of corruption and convictions of corruption. Yeah. And again, you know, when we see that, I think that we see the bipartisan agreement, we see who is there behind Ray Lopez and Burke, and then no other than former Alderman Barsher from the Left Ward, who also made an interesting appearance in the council. I wish that they come together with that same passion to help us address the issue of the unhoused for veterans, something that we've been very passionate and very committed for, not now, but for at least the last 15 years.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good riff. And I guess I have to move on from this one and get to some other issues. But it's really hard for me. I'll just point this out to you. Bill Conway is 34th ward alderman, and he sits next to Carlos Ramirez Rosa, who's the 35th ward alderman. Follow me in this, folks. I say it all the time. The city council's like high school. It's just like high school. Okay. Go back to your high school days. That's what they say. So he sits next to Carlos, and when they came to trying to censor Carlos for what went down on Sanctuary City, which, Byron, don't get me started on that, because that's a half hour from me, all right? The whole Sanctuary City. I wish you had the debate. I wish you had the vote. I wish you had put it up. Let's go. Let's vote on whether we have a referendum in Sanctuary City. But The mayor didn't see it the way I did. He tried to block it and did a bad job of it, and Carlos paid the price. But when it came to that censorship, Byron, Conway voted for Carlos. I don't know if you know this. Because he sat next to him. That's my interpretation. He's like, I can't vote against this guy, then sit next to him for the next 3 years. We'll be hating each other. Apparently, Taparis and Scott don't care about that. Okay?
Interesting.
It's like high school, man. It's straight up.
It truly is. The maturity of those who claim to be as they claim themselves to be the unifiers or whatever, farther from the truth is the immaturity of people who have a lot to learn, not only in the council, but to deal with working people.
All right, let's move on from I could talk about this forever. And like I said, we're going to do a whole show on it. We're going to have clips from it. We're going to play it. That's coming up in a couple weeks. And then Rosanna Rodriguez, I cut a mini deal with her. She's going to come back and comment on the clips as well. I'm not done with this. The Chicago City Council, I think this debate should be studied in civics classes. That's what I believe. You could get students to concentrate on the difference between what politicians say and what they do, and how what they say changes from day to day. And we can get a conversation about what the First Amendment means. So I do believe this is a very important moment in the city council, and I don't believe it was a waste of time. All right, let's move on to the 78. And this is just one of my favorite stories that illustrates. It should also be taught in civics class. So but poor Byron has sat through this lecture many times. So I apologize, Byron, for repeating it. But supposedly in Chicago, there's a sacrosanct notion that aldermen are the kings or queens of all zoning and planning matters in their ward. Aldermen have prerogative and privilege. It's an absolute myth. It's not true. They make it up to excuse themselves. It's a phony issue that reformers and liberals and even some of my beloved lefties bought into, and they should be ashamed of themselves for having been bought into it, but whatever. And case in point, when Byron was elected in 2019, there was a vacancy. So he was the alderman elect, and there was a vacancy created because Danny Solis had already stepped down, and he was in, who knows, I think he was in witness protection program somewhere.
Yes, he was. Missing for like 5 months.
Like the guys from Breaking Bad or something in New Mexico or something. Anyway, yes. Byron, on the streets of Chicago protesting against the 78, it was in his ward. You don't get any more firm in your opposition, Byron, and the Chicago City Council completely contradicting their supposed belief in the principle of alderman prerogative, voted to approve the 78. And then as soon as they could, they took it out of your ward because they didn't trust you.
You cannot make this up.
Come on, Byron. Anything I say not true?
Is accurate. It's accurate, unfortunately. But let's remember, right, the irony with all this is also that former Mayor Lightfoot campaigned against the $2.3 billion giveaway to Related and Lincoln Yards. Related Midwest, the developer in charge of the 78, had already promised 10,000 units alone in housing in exchange of, I believe, at least $1.3 billion. So when you see, you know, when you see the trajectory of these broken promises, right, it is consistent, right? And I think that people should trust these actors from delivering on what they promise, because time is wise, right? And inform us for those who will continue to offer and promise but never deliver. And us who now see, you know, history as a good indicator of future behavior and saying, okay, you know, and that's what, for instance, when they came in with a proposal for the casino, we were very clear that, you know, we wanted to make sure that a committee made of residents all from the surrounding areas, and there was like at least 12 people, or I suppose 18 people from at least three different wards. You know, was very empowering to see when they conducted a survey, right? They collected at least 900 surveys from residents. Over 80% in opposition of a casino. So it became very difficult for the city to fight us, even though they may have the quote-unquote insight game. You know, when we are bringing people closer to the decision-making table, when we're exposing this publicly, right? I think we're seeing changes, and of course that actually took me out of the ward in the next remap opportunity. However, I do think, and for instance, that committee should still be in power, right? Those spaces for accountability in city council, you know, I hope that are respected because they have shown to really be the voices of residents, and I think that there's a responsibility there. And also, how are these people coming back to us for more public dollars when they have not delivered what they promised before? That to me is, you have to have no shame to come back after you don't do what you promised to begin with.
No, the whole process is an insult to the city, the citizens of the city of Chicago. And I'll stand by this, Byron. The reason they dislike you so much is not, in my humble opinion, about burning flags. It's not even, in my humble opinion, about your strong stand on Gaza. It's not even your stand about the Democratic National Convention. No, it's because you're a lefty expenditures, and they don't trust you. Okay, they don't trust you. They think you'll call attention to their little handouts, to
the little inside deals.
Yeah. That's why they hate you. I really they put up with David Moore and his Gaza thing. Notice that? You think about it, okay? You know, Moore, he was at the rally. I don't see anybody moving to kick him out, do you? No.
That's right.
it's not about Gaza, in my humble opinion. It's not about flags. It's about money and deals in the city of Chicago. Yep. And all right, so let's talk about it. The White Sox now, back in 2019 when you opposed that TIF handout for the 78, nobody even thought about the White Sox going there. Somewhere out of nowhere, about 3 months ago, the Sun-Times breathlessly reported, like they were little pom-pom cheerleaders, that the Sox were moving to this, want to move to the vacant chunk of land on the river, the 78. You are no longer the alder of that area. They took it out of your ward, as I said, so you don't have aldermanic prerogative over it. What a joke. But your thoughts about the White Sox getting a public handout to move to the 78?
Well, again, coming from a White Sox fan, right, I don't think that, you know, I don't think we should do things because one day someone wakes up and says, okay, now we're going to, let's get another stadium so that we can rescue this rich developer, right? I mean, there has to be a process to this to say, look, is this good use of public dollars? I mean, this should be a very, very, very important scrutiny into such giveaway of public dollars in a time when we have, again, 69,000 residents unhoused, many of them veterans. I mean, I would like my colleagues, once again, who love and they become the biggest defenders of veterans when they have an opportunity in their agenda. But now, you know, some of them don't even attend the same meetings that they call, by the way. But, you know, when it comes to the public dollars, we got to look at this as in a way that is this something that in our city, you know, one is going to strengthen our economic development or vision or housing situation? I mean, to me, these giveaways, you know, time after time, are the problem that we have to address, the elephant in the room, when billions of dollars have been misused with empty promises. Like, look, Belated Midwest, another developer that in Alma Homes in Roosevelt Square. Again, there's still thousands of units that were still yet to be built. So when it comes enough for us to say, and this is also a developer that received money from HUD, right? When it comes time to say, okay, to continue doing business in the city of Chicago, we gotta make sure that we, one, honor the commitments that you have already have with the city, number one, before we get more to them. And two, the TIF dollars, and that's what I go back to, you know, the other, you know, bigger proposal about this TIF bonding, right, has to be equitable. We have to talk about, make sure that Harold Washington, Mayor Washington, you know, the same mayor who talk about Century City, talk about TIF dollars to go to blighted communities, quote unquote. I mean, we saw the reverse, the opposite of that under the previous mayors, right? And we, again, Mayor Daley had, a lot of power to do the huge fiasco of parking meter deals and you name it that gave away or wealth, right? Subsidies to big developers, corporations like Walmart that pick up and go without any accountability. So this comes time where, these rich corporations have to pay the first share and that we got to worry about making sure that the funding goes to the neighborhoods, go to the small businesses, to the residents. That's what, my community, for instance, residents had a referendum in one of the precincts, actually voted in favor of this referendum. 90%, almost 90% of the people said TIF dollars should go to the small homeowners struggling to make ends meet, people who provide and protect naturally occurring affordable housing, those who keep rents affordable, and not to rich developers who promise one thing yesterday to today don't deliver nothing for us. So I think that there is a lot of a conversation here of TIF usage, and the process, I think, is going to be important about how people can access those funds so that this does not continue to be slush funds for developers. I think that there's an opportunity, and I think the mayor has already indicated that, the TIFs are going to expire. And I do think that the new structure with bonding and I think now the process to access those funds, especially for historically disinvested communities, I said 37 Ward, for instance, those homeowners who have been left out in the cold by the federal government, even though this was a naturally federally recognized disaster, it is something that we must turn our attention to. Those are the real issues that this reactionaries want to distract us from.
All right, now let's get to it. You raised some great, very important points. We'll close with this. TIF dollars being used in areas that need them the most. They call them blighted communities. The TIF law was amended in the late 90s in order to basically make it a program, citywide program. And Mayor Daley and Rahm took advantage of that from the get-go. And it became one of the grossest examples of inequity in the city of Chicago that I have ever seen. I would say it's that, and it's the number one example of inequity in the city of Chicago.
Yep, no question. I agree.
A program intended to help the poor ends up helping the rich. Wow, only Chicago. What a city. So now Mayor Johnson is proposing to spend $151 in TIF dollars downtown converting office buildings into residential. And I talked about it at the outset of the show where everybody praised the plan. They gathered everybody to praise the plan. It's going to come to your committee. And so you're going to play an important role in taping this. Are you supportive of this initiative right now? Go ahead.
Well, what I'm supportive is to now have a process. Let's remember that before the mayor just gave $2.3 billion without even asking questions, right? Yeah. So now I do think that we have a bonding structure that is different to what we were doing before. I do think that now we have a process where if at the table is 1,000 units, right, of housing, when a third of it, that's actually what we've been promoting in Pilsen, for instance, a third within the RO. 30% affordable. Remember, when we asked for 20, a lot of these developers were already crying that this was the end of the world. Nothing happened. In fact, they didn't make a lot of money, right? Yeah. So when now we're saying 30%, right, we're definitely going to review. Again, as you mentioned, I don't have all the details, so I don't want to get ahead of it. But what I can tell you is that we have seen before a complete rejection of any conversation that will change plans at all. To now, I'm seeing, again, and this has a big change, I just received, as of yesterday, another proposal in areas where before you cannot even touch affordable housing before in that they will rather remember those in lieu fees where they built, you go build elsewhere. Now we have a proposal for 75% affordable in a proposal for almost 250 units downtown. So this is changing already the way that, remember we have 80,000 units empty. So these developers rather have empty units than actually house people right now, and this is what is creates, shortage that elevates and increases rents and property taxes because they get subsidies and yet get to keep these units empty. So I welcome the opportunity to push to decrease that number of units empty, to find better use. The terms have to be fair. Again, this is in the big picture. I see a change in what it is. I will look into the details, right? Because as you will tell us, right? The devil usually is in the details.
Yes.
But again, I will definitely welcome the new process to be more transparent in my community. again, and you know that we've been very critical of the use of TIF money, where my predecessor used to even give Target millions of dollars for private development, but yet we barely invested in any affordable housing. Now, you know, we're changing that, and at the extent that there's a change in board participation, you know, communities have to discuss what is needed in each community. And again, Alderman have to be open that the need for affordable housing is everywhere, not only in certain parts of the city.
Well, it's going to be an interesting debate, the Chicago City Council, and it'll be a new alliance because the chair of the Housing Committee that will oversee this, I assume it's going to your committee, is Byron Cisha Lopez. And I believe the ward that will benefit from this is the 34th ward, which is Alderman Billy Conway. And he was the leader of the Get Rid of Byron. And now he's going to go, "Hey, Byron, I'm Billy. I don't believe any of the things I just said about you." It'll be very fun. I'm a really nice guy. Don't believe what they said. But we'll be following this and we'll bring you back. I can't let you go. You've made a couple of references. I got to give a shout out to my dear friend, Adolfo El Dragon Mondragon.
Oh, yeah.
Who is the lawyer. So Byron at one point made reference to a lawsuit. It was actually against Danny Solis, not Michael Joseph Maddox.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, what implications to Alderman?
Exactly. And Ed Burke, by the way.
Ed Burke, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
And it's a fascinating, in my humble opinion, issue at stake, and Adolfo really fought hard on it. Much love to Adolfo, but I always give Byron credit because Adolfo needed a plaintiff.
That's right.
And somehow he got Byron to do it. I mean, I told you at the time, Byron, you got some guts, boy. You're going up against Elise, Madigan. Remember that? And I ended up buying this guy dinner in Chinatown because he won a bet off of me off of that.
That's right.
He spent 90% of his time schmoozing with the owners of the restaurant. So
we had a great time. It was a great meal, though.
All right, Byron, I'm going to let you go. I know you're really busy. Thanks for coming on the show, all right?
You bet. Thank you very much. Take care, man.
That's Byron Cisha Lopez, Alderman of the 25th Ward. I get just a lot of noise in the background. He's at some kind of meeting, so I figured I'd let him go. And thank him for his time. Also, I want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. And I'm sure Byron would agree when I say, "Hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise, take it out of petty cash." Peace and love, everybody.
And don't forget, previous Ben Jarofsky shows available for download at chicagoreader.com. You can follow Ben on Instagram at Benny J Show. And don't forget to tell your friends about the show. Like, subscribe, and follow the Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.